This is Ross Mason. I'm from Dig Ventures. And I'm panicked about my unhealthy fascination with FIFA 22.
Yes, we are.
It feels like it's been months, but to the listener, to my cousin, my nephew, and my mom, who now has figured out how to get on my blog, so she claws her way to these podcasts.
And you've only made your blog for how many years?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. My nieces in Toronto bought her an iPad for her 80th.
Nice.
And she's figured it out, because if my mom can figure out how to get on the internet finally, it's fully idiot-proof. First of all, if Ellen and I are using the internet, it's pretty, we can't figure out printers, as you know, but yes, we figured out everything but printers. But if my mom's on the internet, it's 100% adoption at this point. I forget where I'm at. Are we doing anything? I have not seen you. You are not feeling well.
No, I'm fine. It's just a little cough.
You're Norwegian. You just say that and you're dying or something. I've heard some noises coming out of you that I would check you into a hospital.
You know, if I keel over, get worried, until then, I'm fine.
Because you're always pale. So I wouldn't know from just your skin color if you were going to die. But I just heard something come out of you, and it was like from the gallows of your soul.
Yeah, I'm just born this pasty white.
Because you haven't smoked. That was a smoking hack, and you haven't smoked in years.
22 years now.
All right, well, I miss you. How's life?
Life is good.
Have you followed my travels? Am I supposed to talk about this, or are we supposed to just...
Yeah, but you're
not... Or do people believe that I do this once a week and I show up once a week?
No, they don't.
Okay.
They believe that you're out and about.
So it's good to be back in the studio. We're going to tape a bunch. We are springish to early summerish. It is 2022. I am really enjoying my travels. I've been traveling a lot. I've been cycling. I'm going to be cycling a lot this summer. Summer's coming, which means Coronado. So we'll have to figure out podcasting. But I'll be coming back to Phoenix. How's the studio here? It's so good.
You know, it sounds great. No one's pushed any buttons since I've been gone, so we're good.
How about the social leverage office?
It's
ridiculous.
Awesome. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Everyone's done it.
Tommy's in jury duty today.
What?
That's almost as hard. Like, it's harder to be called for jury duty than my mom. The odds of Tom doing jury duty versus my mom learning the internet, the lower odds were Tom having to do jury duty. He can get out of anything.
They don't ask me anymore. I'm a foreigner.
He's Tom Peterson. He gets out of everything. And
right?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about that.
I think he's actually the Tom Peterson.
Right. He's the Tom, the head Peterson. So we have a special guest, second time guest. You know him, right?
Yes, I do.
So Ross Mason is a British spy. Anytime I talk to someone with a British accent, I assume they're a spy working for, what's their version?
MI6.
Yeah, he's MI6. The name of his company, he's open source guru, king. He started MuleSoft. We've had him on the show. We talked about all that stuff in the past. And if we didn't, I'm still not going to talk about it again. So we'll link to his first podcast with us. But I was introduced to him through Scott Grimes. We share a friend in Scott. We're invested in Scott's company. We're on the board. And Ross is now, Salesforce, long story short, acquired MuleSoft, which was Ross's company, for $6-ish billion, give or take. His roundup, man. His roundup would matter to me. It probably doesn't matter to him. And we tore him away from FIFA, falafel soccer, which he even billionaires, assuming
falafel
he might be
soccer.
One, get addicted to, which seems like he's panicked about his addiction. Nothing disinterests me more than gaming. But that's what makes gaming so special. And he is deeply down the rabbit hole of crypto NFTs. So if there's anybody that I would trust outside of Fred Wilson, Chris Dixon, and the people and Multicoin and Mike Dudas, who we've had on the shows, but that would be Ross, because he's freshly, first of all, he's king of open source. And by king, that's just a name I've given him because I don't know anybody else in open source. And he's living in Amsterdam, top five city, one of my favorite cities in the world, and we've hung out there, and he's a soccer hooligan fanatic. He's a skier. He lives part-time in Switzerland, part-time in Amsterdam, and so we'll get caught up on Europe. We'll get caught up on how people thinking about Ukraine and Russia there because people are closer to it there and not concentrating on their, they have other issues than the stock market and growth stocks, but we'll catch up on growth and software. And he is also a fund manager. He started Dig Ventures and he is currently on Fund 2. So not only did he found a unicorn, but he's invested as a seed investor in unicorn. So I want to talk about that. He's been on both sides of the table. So I trust him. And he's also a board member of, I talked him into coming on our SPAC board. So I get to see
nice.
His face once in a while on our board calls. That is Slack, S-L-A-C is our SPAC, Slack to SPAC. So without further ado, if he's still holding, let's get Ross on. Ross, you're on.
Hello. Hi, guys. How are we doing? There's loads to comment on there. I don't know where to start.
Well, yeah, you don't need to unless I made some mistakes. But you're in Amsterdam. We've hung out there. And Miami's jumped in front of Amsterdam. So for me, Ross, it's I love my hometown. So New York's number one city in the world. Then I would say Miami. Can't believe I'm saying it, but Miami number two.
Wow. Okay.
You will love it. Have you? We'll talk about it.
Yes, I've been to Miami. I actually do think we'll see some people leave Miami and come to Amsterdam.
I do think so. So we're gonna,
I think that there's a bit of a burnout right there. That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. So Miami for me, because it's closer, it's 3 hours from Phoenix. Then I would put Tel Aviv jumped in front of Amsterdam from my recent travels. You know, I think it's got the water, it's got the weather, it's got strange street food. But Amsterdam 4, you know, not counting Phoenix, San Diego, because I lived there, I would say Amsterdam's now number 4. I was number 3. So why did you choose Amsterdam?
It's just an amazing city. It's just beautiful here.
Beautiful.
Right, the people are great. The houses are really interesting. It's super quirky. It's a melting pot of everyone. It's just fun. I love being here. Like, I go everywhere by bike. I like that. Even when it's rainy, I don't care. So it's like it's a whole thing that's a bit different from almost anywhere else in the world, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a town, but it's a town that has Adyen, deliver. I mean, there's some great companies. There's so much money in that town now, right? So what's it like? Like, I looked at real estate there. It's bananas, but relatively for if you call it a top five city in terms of like food, experience, coolness, it's still relatively cheap, if you ask me, but still expensive.
Yeah, it's creeping up, but it's if you go to any other city that you might name in, you know, Paris, London, Berlin, they're all a lot more expensive. Expensive to live, expensive to eat, expensive to visit, not as accessible. Amsterdam is just like a really good mix of everything. And I actually do think with crypto, it's going to be even more interesting, right? Just in terms of there's a lot of creators here, and I think they're going to start to sort of line up and light up with some of the new ways of creating business models with Web3.
Okay, so let's now go through the laundry list. MuleSoft, are you day-to-day involved still or no?
No, I haven't been involved in well over 2 years, and I actually did official resignation in 2020.
And who wrote that? You?
Yeah.
Or your team?
That was me.
No. So, you...
Yeah, that's the problem with leaving is you have to write everything yourself again.
Because I'd love to write it. I would tweet it. Okay. So, you're not a big social media guy, but do you read Twitter? What do you use Twitter for? And let's talk about tools that you use of the trade, because you're a VC / investor / man about town.
Yeah, so I think my girlfriend and I have both got into NFTs over the last few months. So we're spending an odd amount of time on Discord. I am spending some time on Twitter. I don't tweet that much. I do a bit.
Right.
I'm gonna probably start doing it a bit more.
Well, even if it was just to link to what you read, see, I'm more interested in not you being in the conversation as much as what's Ross reading.
Yeah, what do I read?
Like, I know that doesn't do anything for you, but it would do everything for the people that like you and your brand.
Yeah, but
and
you know what's interesting, right, is I used to read incessantly, and now I don't. And I was talking to someone.
Reading will slow you down because you know you have domain experience. You know who to talk to.
Well,
keep going.
That's the thing, is I can now pick up the phone and get in touch with people.
Correct.
And I can get more in 30 minutes than I would reading a book. Correct. Or a long article. So actually, what I read is white papers. So I recently read the white paper on FunctionLAMP, which is this really interesting Web3 storage platform that's emerging. When we talk about companies, I talk about it, but that's actually probably the last long-form piece I read in the last week.
And what do you get from white papers? Because I'm not technical, so when I read a white paper, it's like me listening to a podcast and reading. I don't listen. I can't concentrate. So what do you pick out of the white paper? Forgetting the technical, can you tell what the team's like? Can you tell what the idea's like?
You can tell where they're heading and how they're thinking about solving the problem, but you can't really tell much about the team. I don't think it doesn't give you enough substance. You've got to get on the phone with the team, but it does tell you in quite a bit of detail, not just the vision, but how they're really thinking about it playing out and what their go-to-market strategy is. So it's a good way to sort of get an idea of at least how they're orientated before you have the conversation where you start digging into who they are.
And so how did this white paper come to you? A friend, or you just were interested in storage, file storage?
I have a growing sort of list of people on Telegram and WhatsApp. Actually, usually people who are like a generation younger that are sort of dialed into this 24/7.
Yep.
And they ping this and, you know, they start to know what I like and what I respond to. And this one's a really good one.
And how is it different, let's say, than Arweave or FileNet? Like, what, do you have to read all the other white papers to know where they stand?
No,
so how do you now put all this in context?
It's basically a software network on top, right? So it supports a three of the protocols, and it probably support more in future. But essentially what they're trying to do is build a Web3 set of, not Web3, like an Amazon set of services to allow developers to build things, except the compute and storage is sitting on people's desktops or in their houses versus centralized in Amazon. And the way they incentivize people is much the same way as you incentivize people on Bitcoin and Ethereum. You have valid, you know, jobs that are happening that you get paid for. Open source developers are incentivized to build apps there because they get paid for the app, plus they get royalties for usage. So it's the holy grail of open source, in my opinion, which is you build within a network where you can get rewarded for your efforts over time. And if it does great, then you also get rewarded greatly. Very different from sort of open source we had with Red Hat, where basically Red Hat weren't even the developers of the operating system, but they packaged it and distributed it and they made all the money. I like it as an open source founder, and you know, I still love open source in terms of a distribution model, but it needs a commercial model, and this looks interesting. So I'm going to dig in more, but the white paper
was
fun.
So this is how you find stuff. So you were destined, if there was one person in my network, and because when we first met, crypto did not, 17 or 18, or no, maybe 19 or 20 when we met, crypto would not have been on your brain. Obviously, you were busy, but it wouldn't have been on your brain even once you sold to Salesforce. But now you're down the rabbit hole. So what made you go down the rabbit hole?
Well, actually, it wasn't my brain. So I was just talking about this in 2018. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin dropped below 3,000. And I started reaching out to people in the Bay Area who were the experts in the area at the time. And I spoke to them about, you know, are they doubling down right now? Where's Bitcoin going? And I think I asked the wrong questions, because all of them said, well, we're holding enough, I'm not going to buy anymore. So I didn't buy any extra at that time.
Got it.
But my instinct was I should buy some, and I missed out on it. And I sort of bought in a bit later. So I was watching Ethereum and Bitcoin, like a lot of people in 2017, 2018. And then I came here, and it really in the last year and a half have I really been going deep on this stuff.
And what was it about it?
In the beginning, it's enough people are looking at this stuff, and enough smart people are doing really interesting things that, and I also have a, you know, function of time. Like, I actually have some time to look at it. That was the entry point. But then what I'm really enjoying about it right now is just the dynamics of Web3 communities and how, activity, purpose, and reward are married together to pull people into these communities, especially in the NFT space. That is a really interesting dynamic, and it's something that I'm looking at from a venture perspective as well. So I spent the weekend really going like full nerd on this stuff and building some stuff this weekend, which was fun.
And so activity, purpose, reward. So that is that more gaming than it is necessarily, I mean, gaming's a business, but is that more the gaming angle? Because community is tough to make. Listen, I hear people throw around community, and someone who, like it or not, has built stock twits over 12 years and knows what thing or two about community, good and bad, is it's a terrible business, right? Like, I know people are using Discord, but I can't figure it out. Like, Telegram, WhatsApp, I totally get. Mm-hmm. You can hang out with people who are generation younger than you that are doing it 24/7. It's rather filtered. Discord feels like a cave full of terrorists who are all out to get your money, and which is fine because people love it at scale, you know, but I don't know how to use it. So how do you separate that?
Yeah, I don't. So there's a couple of things. One is, I don't think community on its own is the business. I think some people would argue differently. I have a bit of the same opinion, having seen communities develop over time in other spaces. But community is a great way to keep people engaged around something else. Now, for some communities, it will be the purpose and the mission of the community. If you look at World of Women, for example, you know, super interesting NFT project that has a really interesting set of founders and purpose. And my girlfriend and I bought into that, and we're following that religiously. I think CultDAO is really interesting, which is like, you know, is really calling for the downfall of everything centralized and non-democratized. So this, and obviously, I can't go much further without talking about Bored Ape Yacht Club. I got my ape right before Yoga Labs acquired CryptoPunks and Meeples. And that's been my best performing asset in the last 2 years. I can't even explain that.
So your best performing asset, it is an asset. So tell me, was it FOMO or what? Because you have the capital to fart around even in FOMO. Gary bought one at 250K. And Gary's not scared of being wrong. And Gary is one of the best investors I know, my partner. So what was it that got you over the hump? Because I really have a problem with this. So I'm really trying to talk to smart people. What's in it for you?
Yeah, so actually something twigged that I did it. Like, we've been reading stuff and people talking about diversification of your crypto assets, right? And I hold a lot of Ethereum, a bunch of Bitcoin, and a bunch of other coins. And they're sort of either staked or they're not really doing much. I'm not playing around with DeFi. I'm not leveraging myself too much. And, one day I was on OpenSea. I was looking at the collection. I thought, actually, well, this collection has really held value and grown over time. And Yoga Labs, I was hearing, I heard a bit of a rumor that they were raising a big round of funding. And I just figured, well, there's got to be more behind this than just creating and dropping NFTs. Mm-hmm. And so I bought one. It was 190 grand, which seems ridiculous. I did tweet this, actually, the whole journey. And it seemed like a lot of money, but it felt like diversification, because I felt like even if it lost 10, 15, 30%, it was no different than losing that in my crypto portfolio.
In Ethereum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll take a 30% risk on that, and with potential upside. And then two amazing things happened. One is the announcement of the acquisition, which obviously shot the floor price up by 30%. And then they did the ApeCoin drop to anyone who's holding a Bored Ape.
So that was like a freebie. I was in Israel with Yoni and he was laughing because foreseen that. Did you foresee that?
No, I didn't.
That was just free money. That's like a digital dividend.
Yeah, it was crazy. But it was just like, I mean, that's why it's the best performing asset. But the reason why I bought that versus something else, or, I could have bought 20, 30 other ones of emerging NFT projects, is I felt like they were going to do something. And I realized, what you realize in crypto is you can't watch from the sidelines. You've got to be in there and
Correct. You've
got to go do it. You've got to go do everything. And you're going to get scammed and you're going to lose out and you're going to buy things that turn to crap. But in that process, you risk what you can afford to lose. And then
And
you learn a lot in that. And that's kind of what my journey has been, definitely the last year, is just jumping in and getting involved.
I grew up as the son of a lunatic, but he is my dad, and he's a collector of things pre-internet. And so whether it was guns or snuff bottles or Renaissance art or antiques, he went through the same things. You learn, you get ripped off, you get scammed, you make money, you find out what you like. This is a digital version of antiquing meets art collecting meets. So what does an NFT mean to you and your girlfriend?
So it's different things in different projects, right? So we actually sat down one day and we thought, okay, what do we really care about? Like, what is the point of buying a Bored Ape or buying a World of Women NFT?
World of Women, by the way, are beautiful pieces. Like, if well, I was going to say anything's art, the World of Women are something I would hang on a wall.
Yes, exactly. And we came to the conclusion, A, we love the art. So even if it didn't do anything, you've actually got a nice piece of art. Mm-hmm. Two, we actually suspected there was going to be a drop when we looked at them. So that was another driver, sort of an economic driver. And then we did a lot of research on the projects. I remember we spent the whole one Saturday just doing this. And basically we were looking at the founders, we were looking at the mission, we looked at their YouTube videos, which actually weren't great, but the person doing the YouTube videos wasn't the artist and wasn't the, she was like a head of comms. And so you have to know who you're listening to, I think. And so the written stuff on World of Women is much better than the video, early video stuff. You have to jump with a bit of gut. Honestly, with a lot of these things, if you can't afford to do it, then you shouldn't do it because there is a chance that you're going to lose out. That's the same for any kind of investment.
Yep.
But we're willing to take a leap on it, and you know, you get into the Discord. Actually, we got scammed on that one. That was the first time I got scammed buying an NFT.
So what happens? You get scammed. Someone sends you a link.
Yeah, you get, so in the not a Discord, but like you'll get a link. I can't remember where the link came from, but it sort of seemed like it came from a reputable source.
Mm-hmm.
So you get these things dropped into your wallet. So that's one of the big problems. They're going to have spam problems in these wallets, already happening actually. You've got to be very careful of that. You've got to go to the Discord page. You have to look at the official links, which has become a de facto place to find this stuff. And you can only get the link from there. And if you get it from anyone else, there's a very, very high chance that you're just going to get scammed. Correct. And we did actually.
And they're feeding, for you, it wasn't so much on your greed. You're just a little sloppy, I guess.
We got what it is, you get a bit excited. Like when you actually, you're like, I'm going to pull the trigger and do this. Like it is kind of exciting because, you know, there's only a certain amount and you're trading. It's a bit like eBay all over again, where, you know, you'd wait on and you wait for the last second to drop your bid in, and then the offer wouldn't go through and you lost the thing. And you're like, if I just like didn't wait 3 seconds less, I probably would have got it. This is a bit like that. What happens is they create this urgency for you to buy. Like there's a counter going up while you're looking at the page and they're asking for a cheaper price than you're expecting, and you can get fooled by it. And we did like three times.
Yeah, I think when I send you emails in the future for meetings, I'll just say you have 3 seconds to say, this includes an NFT. If you show up for our board
meeting. As long as it lands in my MetaMask, I'll definitely answer it.
I just learned something, Knut. Mark that down.
Done.
So you get scammed. There's no, the thing about crypto is you only can, it's only becomes a story. There's no governing body, which is part of the cool thing. So where is your head around all this? Like you're a big boy. You're learning by doing, you're saying all the right things, meaning you got into NFTs as diversification, meaning you didn't start out in NFTs, you started out with Bitcoin and Ethereum, and you're like, okay, like I can live with a 50% drawdown in Ethereum, so what the hell, I'll buy the best asset that I know exists and see what happens there and slowly go down that world, which is how Bored Ape has become an asset. I still am a non-believer, but I get where it's the next step to the next step. So where does it eventually lead for someone like you? Other than, and we'll talk about some of the investment, but where does it lead for you? Would you start another company? And if you did, would it be in crypto?
Well, obviously the next thing for me is I'm going to like launch my own coin and create my own community.
And will that coin be a picture of you?
I hope not.
So you launch your own...
Funny enough, I did actually mint an NFT this weekend, so I've never minted one. And it was a picture of me. I'll send you one.
Okay, send me one. I'm scared to open it. So if I don't open it, I'll have my team of lawyers.
It's actually kind of funny. It's worth having it.
Okay. So you minted an NFT. So is that exhilarating? Is that easy? What, like, because you're a geek. So what's that like?
Yeah, it's easy. Like OpenSea's made it super easy. Like getting into other people's wallets and getting it sort of visible is a little bit harder. You can transfer it, but it sort of disappears. Sometimes you have to import it. It doesn't work perfectly yet. But it's fun. Like, again, it's part of just, experiencing everything in that journey, right? You buy a few NFTs, you're like, okay, so what does it take to mint these things? What does it take to set up Discord? Like you, by the way, I find Discord quite disorientating. I'm getting used to it, but boy, that's a weird interface. Like
it was built for something else.
So yeah, definitely.
It wasn't built for this. So you mint it and you decide how many you want to mint of whatever this is?
Yep, I mint it.
You're in control.
You mint it. You can control how many you mint, and it gets quite easy to then distribute. Weirdly, out of nowhere, you get some likes because I guess people are just following these things. I'm not sure why they liked it, but I thought it was hilarious. I just airdropped it to a few people just to see if it would work.
And then can you track who put it in their wallet?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing. Everything's on chain, right? So
yeah, everything's on chain.
Everything's on chain. So anything you do at that point is tracked.
And then you did it on Ethereum, I imagine.
Actually, I did. I did on Matic.
Got it. And so if you're going to do your own coin, what would be the thesis around it?
So I think you might like this, actually, because I think venture, as you know, is a bit of a cottage industry, right? You get access to it when you have enough capital to put in and leave it there for 10 years. But then the upside is fantastic. And what I've found with my portfolio, my family office is, you know, we have 26 companies and we have an advisory group of people that actually help our founders with all sorts of things, right? So this isn't people
like— Is this pre-Dig, the 26 companies, or is this included?
No, that's Dig. Yeah.
Okay,
so Dig Fund 1 is 26 companies. And we've basically, out of necessity, created an advisory group of people. And these are people who are earlier in their careers. They're working in other companies. They're doing things like setting up sales teams early. They are doing things like, the first leaders in customer success or pre-sales. And they are, they are very focused on their career, but they're really interested in learning or imparting their knowledge to other companies, smaller companies. Some even want to transition into those companies at some point. Mm-hmm. And so what makes them interesting is they have a lot of working knowledge. And it's very relevant knowledge. Like my knowledge every year sort of loses its shelf life a bit because I'm not actively in a company anymore. So a bunch of things sort of, it becomes less valuable over time, I feel.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys are actually in the job actually doing it, but they don't have access to invest in the fund. They don't have that kind of liquidity in order to do it. And so what we're looking at doing at Dig Ventures is creating a carry token. So basically creating a token that distributes the future profits of the fund. And we're going to use that to reward our advisors. And the reason to do it that way, you could do carry agreements, things like that. But the reason for doing it that way is two reasons. One is, if you give someone carry, they don't see it, right? You've done this before, I'm sure. You've sort of been a venture partner or something in another fund. You get some carry, but it's completely opaque to you.
Yeah,
and if you make it into a token,
and you feel bad calling, like I've done well because it was a fund that had Uber in it, so I've done well. But like, you can't really call the manager and go, "Did I get paid?" Because you don't know.
Yeah, and you don't know what it's worth, and it kind of almost doesn't matter to the point it's not even a driver, right? Because it's just something you did, and it's like a nest egg that at some point surprises you or not.
Correct.
And I like the idea of putting that on chain as well, so that you can use the tools that come with blockchain L1s and L2s to actually issue a token and allow people to see it. And then, of course, what we can also do is we can offer redemption windows. Because it's carry, we can actually always guarantee we'll buy the carry back at the value of the fund, because we believe there's still upside in it because we're already long on the fund in the first place.
So there's a market, theoretically, for the carry. You know, when I think of crypto, I think of all the pennies people have lost in seats and cars and whatever. And on-chain solves all this. When people say, like, when I think about how stupid fiat money is, that's what I always think of. It's like all the people's jars and cash lying around and pennies and nickels and dimes, trillions of dollars that are off-chain, like out of the system, never to be put in. Like when there was that one company that would throw all your change in and would give you bills and take 5%, that was genius. But it's really not functional at scale.
Yeah.
And so chain just means that every nickel and penny is accounted for.
Yeah, it's accounted for. And then, but off, you know, also, I think we've lost, I would love to know the stats on this, but we've probably lost more money through DeFi protocols and sort of crypto hacks than bank robberies in the last 100 years.
Well, that's not good. So what do you mean by that? What were you going with that?
Well, I guess I'm saying that even though things are on chain doesn't mean you can't be exploited.
Good point.
Right. So, you know, you asked about, you know, what's it like? Well, it's the Wild West there right now.
Right.
Like, I feel like I'm really tech savvy and I got duped. And I find myself on probably a weekly basis following something and be like, hang on, wait a minute. Like, don't get swept away on this. And you realize that along with democratization of everything, which I think is amazing and I back it, also means risk. Right.
Yes.
There's just more people out there who don't quite know what's going on yet. And there is a bit of a price to pay to jump in as early as it is. Like, a lot of this stuff will get fixed. Unfortunately, it is going to get fixed by centralized companies a lot of the time.
Yes.
And we're going to be in that same weird, wait, I thought everything was going to get decentralized. But it's like, yeah, but we need banks. We need trusted institutions in the middle so that we don't lose large amounts of money. But I do, you know, I have high hopes that we get that fixed. And there's plenty of people trying to work on that in various levels of decentralization to de-risk it a bit.
Now, I'm jumping all over, but so with your coin, would it make, so is the hope for the coin that other funds use it, or is it just going to be for you?
So this will just be us, but I kind of like the idea of
offering this as a, whatever you call this coin, it's for any VC to use because it's open source.
Yes. We haven't gotten that far yet, and I'm sort of still early on it, so I'm not going to say anything with absolute certainty.
Right.
But if you think about it, it's a really nice model, and you could start with emerging managers to give them access to a community and then start building their own community that way.
Correct.
Because what I like about emerging funds is typically they're more focused on certain areas. So you could really start filling out an almost decentralized VC model where you can back everything from consumer to healthcare to biotech. You know, we do cloud infrastructure, but you can leverage the resources of one community. That's pretty interesting. Some funds would probably want to run their own community because they're working differently, or they really have a massive community. Like Y Combinator, for example, have the Orange
Correct.
DAO.
So they have a DAO.
Yes, they do.
Makes sense.
I like that model. It's
got it.
It has some complexities, but it's pretty interesting.
Okay, I'll study that. So Orange DAO by YC, that makes sense, or Techstars could do it. But you would do it for yourselves, but try and build it in a way that other managers like Social Leverage could use, I think.
Yes, exactly. Because I like to build products. So for me, always I'm thinking about, okay, how would other people use this?
And theoretically, that could be a business. It might not be a VC-backed business, but that could be a hell of a business where 500 VCs are using Mason Coin to build out their community and advisorship agreements, et cetera, on-chain.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of this era, right? The Web3 is like not everything has to be VC-backed anymore, which makes it much more accessible. Because VCs want a certain level of return and hunger and growth. But there's so many companies that either don't fit that profile, or people who build those companies that don't want to run those type of companies again. Like, I don't really want to run another MuleSoft. It was amazing, but it was so much work and it sort of impacted so much of my life at the time that I'd be mad to go back into that unless I, you know, there's something so burning I had to go do. But that doesn't seem to be on the horizon for me.
And you're not. You're in your 40s.
I am.
Yeah. So what's the funnest thing about being a VC? Obviously, it's your own capital for the most part, but you're now taking outside capital. But what's been the funnest part?
The funnest part is, I think, working with the founders on, the whole point of Dig Ventures, by the way, was to really de-stress the first few years of the founding journey.
Yeah.
Right. So that, you know, if you imagine if you're a technical founder, you're building cloud infrastructure, you've never done sales, you've never done marketing, you've never thought about a go-to-market strategy, you haven't done pricing, you haven't hired people before, or haven't thought about organizing a team around you. And so what we do is we help founders just with frameworks and working sessions when they need them. We don't push it on them, but we do let them know it's available. We actually do a lot of work with the founders up front to see where their gaps are, and we're very honest and tell them what we think. And they kind of love that candid sort of, yes, I need help in this area, and you know, how should I think about it? So I love building that model out. I look at it like customer success, but for portfolio, so portfolio success. And the other thing I love is it allows me to keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening. I just love tech. I love progress. I love understanding how, not just really tech, by the way, I think it's more how tech touches every part of society. I just love following it. And if I have a reason to be in it every day, that just makes me want to get up in the morning.
So you love tech. This is a way for you, like me. So we're both the same way. We want to de-stress those 2 years because we know how awful it is. And so what has changed the most from you starting a company to now backing people? I have been complaining for a year and a half. You know, oh, when I was a founder, you know, we had to go through snow and there was dial up. But like, have you seen a big change? And is it the VC behavior? Is it everybody? Or are you just, you're happy about the way the world is there?
Well, I mean, there's loads of change, right? There's a lot more capital. There's more innovation, which I think is great. You know, it's not all good. You know, there's a lot of money being banded around, which can be a little bit damaging. I remember probably my biggest lesson as a founder is I raised a round with Lightspeed in 2017 for $12 million, which seemed like a lot back then. And we just didn't need the money. And what happened was we raised the capital without really knowing what our go-to-market was. We then hired a bunch of people thinking the way to solve it was to hire people.
And that was only in 2017?
No, 2007, sorry.
Seven.
Yeah, 2007.
Yeah. So then that's a lot of money in 2007.
Yeah, that was. And we actually basically in a year and a half burnt $10 million of it. And we had to fire people. It was like a nightmare. It was like a classic sort of startup just running too fast before you could walk properly.
Good lesson.
And so these bigger rounds earlier on, like seed rounds and A rounds, aren't great, but they are what they are. And it's the reality right now. So what we do is we really coach our founders on how to think about how to spend that versus not just to go faster because you've raised capital.
Correct. I'm getting a lot of founder calls. It's time to raise. I go, why? Like, where are you at versus the last time you raised? And what's the rush? Like, where's the art of this? Like, you know, it's like climbing a mountain. So there is that, I don't know what everybody's reading or not reading, but there's this pace that everybody thinks they're supposed to be on. And each company is different. So you like seed like us. You like being there early. How are you getting your deal flow? Is it just from your network? Or do you have a vision of what, I know you like enterprise and software. So where are you comfortable getting deals from?
Yeah, so it's definitely network-based for me. Obviously, I know a lot of founders in Europe, a lot of like enterprise founders because of, you know, the MuleSoft cohort. So I know all those founders. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we do deals with the founders of UiPath, with Stripe, with others. We actually exchange notes either monthly or quarterly. Also, we get deals from our founders. So our founders are pretty engaged too. I've noticed founders are getting dulled in earlier these days. And so that's a good source. And then we also do work with other funds as well, mostly in Europe because we're trying to source European deals. You know, I came back here wanting to bring some of the lessons learned building MuleSoft in the US back to Europe. And so we're sort of trying to focus more on European companies. But there is a lot of US volume. And so we ended up doing like 35% of US companies in Dig Fund 1.
That is cool. So taking a step back now, because you have your own family office and we like talking about markets and no one likes waking up every day and seeing their beloved tech down 1% or 2%. So what has it been like? How are you thinking about things from a top-down approach?
Top down, I've actually shifted more of my portfolio into the stable stuff in crypto. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are doing it. I'm leaving I used to run my own tech portfolio. I still have about a third of it left, where I've just reduced my positions over the last 18 months, mostly because the asset managers, like JP Morgan and others are doing it anyway. So it seemed pointless for me running my own portfolio when my managed portfolio is also investing in tech. And actually they're better at shifting from tech to energy at the right times and things like that. Mm-hmm. I actually, from a macro perspective, I'm spending less time on tech stock, more time on actually picking windows to reduce my positions in my own portfolio. And then I'm moving those positions over to crypto. I'm actually, despite what Peter Thiel says, I am very long on Ethereum. and Bitcoin. I think they both are going to be absolute winners. It's just that Bitcoin doesn't have so much utility compared to Ethereum right now. And so I'm long on those, plus a bunch of the other chains, plus, you know, I'm really interested in the sort of the middleware layers that are coming up beyond the L2 layers.
Well, give me an example of one middleware layer, what, so people know what that means.
Oh, so like things like Chainlink, which is essentially middleware. It's what all the DeFi protocols are built on, because decentralized finance works on one chain, but at some time you have to take things off chain. Mm-hmm. And so you need middleware to connect, you know, between chains, which is obviously one of the challenges with some of the newer sort of DeFi protocols, is that you've got to move money from one chain to another. That's quite difficult.
Yeah.
So you need a middleware provider.
Yeah, and that's why I've chosen to just pay the 2 and 20 and just said, listen, there's enough alpha there that I don't want to be managing my own money in that space. So it's different strokes for different folks. You're closer to the ground on this. And then where's Europe at in all this?
I think Europe is at a really interesting spot. Like I'm a huge advocate, not just because I'm here. I came here not knowing what I was going to find.
But it matters. You're there.
Like, yeah. I think if I was still in San Francisco, I'd be looking at Europe thinking, okay, that's still where the opportunity is. Right. There's loads happening in America, but it's getting a little bit saturated. There's a lot of people trying to deploy a lot of capital over there. Everything is getting overheated. I think there's more and better deals to be had over here. And I do think Web3 is going to favor Europe in the short term, at least, just because of the cultural differences and kind of the gating factor of tech has been removed, because you can now create funded companies that don't look like VC companies, VC backed companies. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. And where are you seeing that from? Amsterdam only, or in Berlin or London, everywhere?
Seeing it everywhere. Actually, London is still, like, a lot of our Web2 pipeline still comes from London and Berlin. There is a lot of crypto stuff happening there, but it's but I am noticing in Amsterdam, the cultural movement of Web3 is really starting to take hold. There's a big conference here in June that I'm going to be speaking at, and it's very much focused on the art and culture. But it's, you know, it's not just art and culture for the sake of art and culture. It really is around this idea of incentivizing communities around new products, new ways of engaging, new services, new kind of loyalty. And I find that fascinating, because if I was going to create an open source project today, I would do it the Web3 way in a heartbeat, right? If you think about the MuleSoft exit, right? In that exit, the employees and the investors did really well, of course. And it was sort of heavily weighted to the investors and founders, and then it trickled down. But there was 100,000 people around MuleSoft that either adopted in some way or part of the open source community that
were customers,
partners, right? That all sort of spread the word. And they of course, they're incentivized to do so, but not greatly incentivized. It was sort of, well, you know, we're doing it because our customers are asking for it, so we're going to do this as well. There's demand. And, you know, that's good free market dynamics.
Yeah.
But, you know, as MuleSoft, what we could have done, we couldn't have done it then, but you could do now, is you can also create a loyal brand affinity with the people that contribute meaningfully to your community. And that community can be customers, it can be the open source, it can be partners. And they could have had some of the reward as well. Not meaning, you know, nothing that changes their life, but some sort of distribution that says, yeah, I was a part of this, and you know, I got rewarded for the things I did. The way we did it was through events. Like, you know, I'd turn up to events in 20 cities a year, and we'd meet people, and we'd give out hats and t-shirts. And that's kind of the way you created the brand affinity. And today I just do it totally differently.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. I'm doing my first DAO. And, you know, if I could start StockTwits over, it would be in Web3, like, period, end of story. I don't know how I would have done it, but it would have been on, you know, it would have been a different reward system for the users and contributors, etc. And it's hard to go do it and rebuild it. Do you think it can be rebuilt, stuff like that? Or you just can't? Like, can Twitter rebuild itself? Like, I just don't trust that they can do that.
No, I don't think so. Like, I think they'll try, and obviously Facebook is going hard at this. I sort of hope they don't win. right? They're, you know, obviously, they have the economy of scales, they have audience, they have budget, and they have resource. So they have a lot in their favor. But the great thing about this movement is a lot of the focus is actually getting away from that. By the way, again, you know, I'm going to pitch Functionland again. This is kind of their big pitch is you're moving away from the centralized rental cloud. Mm-hmm. Like, stop storing your photos there, store them locally, but have apps that work more beautifully and better than the apps on your phone today. I just like that narrative. I just think it levels the playing field and allows us to start innovating again without having to rely on the big vendors that we all buy the stocks in if we can.
Yep, I love it. And then your kids are too young for tech, or where what are they interested in?
They basically love Minecraft. And when they speak now, we used to have to validate whether they're talking about Minecraft or real world, because sometimes it's just hard to tell.
Wow.
So they love that. They, you know, that seems to be the game of choice at the moment. In fact, we all play it.
And what is it about FIFA versus going outside and skiing or walking or biking that has trapped your attention? What is it about someone who could do anything they want with their time playing against psychos online?
I don't know. That's why I'm panicking a bit. Right.
Is it how you unwind, or does it cause more aggravation?
I think if you ask my girlfriend, she says it causes me more aggravation because I smash the controller down every now and again. It's weird. So yesterday, right, I decided to sit down. I thought I'm going to mint a token and I'm going to mint an NFT. I'm going to see how you do it. I'm going to see how it fits together. And then I was going to write a smart contract so I could get a feel for that. And I was, you know, I had the day to do it. And after about an hour, I realized, I got a bit of ADD. It's hard to sit and do something for more than an hour. And so I'd go and play FIFA. And it's a completely different part of the brain. And I, you know, play one game, stop, go back. And I did this all day. And it was kind of like the perfect day in for me. Like, I got to nerd out, got to do some crypto stuff. But I also got to... I'm a bit competitive. I like playing online, and you know, when you win, it's great, and when you lose, you try and take the best out of it. But yeah, it's a very addictive game. Like, even I was up till midnight sorting out my team, because every now and again they ramp up the players, and you have to get new players on your team to keep up. And I know I'm being gamed. I know it's stupid. It's a complete waste of time. But actually, I kind of enjoy it. I just like doing it.
As long as you're enjoying it, that's great. So, well, it's great to catch up. I'm going to see you in Amsterdam for this event. So you're speaking. It's the, what is it, a money show?
No, it's the Met AMS. And so it's going to be a mix of everything. Like, it's a pretty big stage, big audience. There's a bunch of crypto funds here. There's a bunch of artists here. There's a bunch of everything here. So I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I'm pretty excited.
And that's the beginning
it.
Of June, right?
Beginning of June. I'll send you the information.
Yeah, send me that. I think I'm planning on being there with Matt. Okay, well, a pleasure. It's an hour, so as much as we could talk, I want to cut you off just because you're busy, and you know, an hour seems to be the number. I'm glad. It seems like everything's going well, which is great. It's always fun to see that you've got, you know, listen, you could go do it. You kick back and ski and play Fife all day.
Don't get me wrong. I do that stuff too. But when I go skiing in the evening.
You do. But the surface of tech is so big. There's just too much. There's too much to get done. So it's nice to see everybody not checked out. It's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
There is, like you said, a lot to do. So I look forward to seeing you in June. Thanks for doing this for my audience and kind of sharing what you're learning. I got a good feel for everything. So I appreciate it, buddy. And we'll talk soon. I'll see you in person in June.
Amazing. Cheers, Howard. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye, man.
See you. K-Nut.
Yeah.
It's fun to just talk. I mean, we could have brought up the war and Putin and Ukraine. Did he bring it up? No. Obviously, it's in the back of every mind there. But life is going on, whether we like it or not. People are doing stuff.
I was there recently.
Despite the tragedy that's going on. Like, we haven't talked in a while, but it's a fucking absolute tragedy.
It is.
But, like, tech just continues to power forward because people are getting shit done. So I expected to hear a little more worry and concern because there's a war going on in pretty close by over there to everybody. Are you hearing stuff in Norway? Like, do people freaking out?
It's the proximity is there. There's refugees coming across the borders every day. This is so much more real to people in Europe than it is here.
Correct.
In the U.S.
Yeah. But anyways, you can just see how money is getting put to work. And last time he was on, we talked about tech stocks, but you can just see how everybody's over-allocated tech, meaning someone who knows more about open source than enterprise software, et cetera, is reducing its holdings. This is like smart people not buying the dip. They're saying, you know what, JP Morgan and all these people that we make fun of are just better at doing the allocation. And they may not be better at the timing, but they're better at like deciding when to switch to energy and agriculture and interest rate sensitive stuff, blah, 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 blah. And Ross has gone down the rabbit hole of deep tech in a new way, which is crypto and money, and pretty cool. So I think you get both sides of the table. People will say, oh, he's in tech. But yeah, he's the tech that we talked about last time is not the tech that so much interests him now. So you've got to evolve. And that was fun. So that was Ross Mason. He's over in Amsterdam. Dig Ventures, started MuleSoft. Knut, thanks. It's fun being back in the studio. You are listening to Panic with Friends. Each week, I sit down with a founder, venture capitalist, entrepreneur, investor, author, and we talk about the markets. We talk about investing. We try and stay a little bit ahead. You don't need to be a year ahead. Sometimes just a month or two or 3 months ahead. And we talk to people that tinker. Use these products. That's how you make money. Ross described how he's doing it. You can go to Spotify, search my name, Howard Lindzen, Panic with Friends. You subscribe or on YouTube and you will get a, you don't have to worry, you will get an alert on your phone, majiggy. So we will see everybody next Thursday. Thanks.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.